Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. This is Mark Levine reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. The Boy Scouts did something tremendous just last week. They, at least at the national level, got rid of their policy against hiring gay and lesbian leadership, or at least allowing them to lead troops. Now, the Boy Scouts has had a long history of, well, anti-gay discrimination and also discrimination against all kinds of people. So it seems like it's a really big accomplishment. And in fact, it is. On the other hand, there's still a ways to go. There's still some local Boy Scouts organizations that haven't quite made it all the way to equality yet. My guest today is the leader of Scouts for Equality. He's a former Eagle Scout. His name is Zach Walls. Zach, you may recall, if you remember his name, became YouTube famous a few years back when, as a 19-year-old, he was defending his mother's right to marry. And he stood up in an Iowa hearing to talk about that and, like I said, became YouTube famous. He gave a very eloquent plea for equality for his family. And since that time, as I said, he's been running Scouts for Equality. Zach and I met each other just last weekend. I guess it was.
Yeah.
Last weekend at the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, and I invited him to come on the show, and I'm really glad he has. Zach, before we get to the Boy Scouts, I just wanted to ask you, what's it like to be sort of anonymous, living a life in Iowa, not exactly the nation's capital or a big city, and you're there and you're raised by two moms, and everything, I guess, is relatively normal until you defend them and suddenly you become YouTube famous.
Well, I'm just glad that it was YouTube famous for defense of my two moms' right to marry and not for me wiping out on a skateboard or something. It could have been a little bit more scandalous, and instead to go from kind of anonymity to being known for a passionate defense of love and strength and family, and speaking truth to power was. I think I got pretty lucky in terms of how the internet responded to that one.
Well, I think they responded so well, Zach, because you were so eloquent in your defense of your moms and also in just your talk about the fact that it's really quite normal. There's really very little that distinguishes gay couples, lesbian couples from straight couples other than the gender of the two people. And so since that time, you've become the leader of the
executive director.
Director. Okay, get the title right. The executive director of Scouts for Equality. How'd you end up doing that?
So it's a funny story that really couldn't have happened in another time. After the video went viral in 2011, I was managed to snag a book deal and actually was able to go on The Daily Show to promote that book. And actually, I know it's Jon Stewart's last show tonight, so I hope your listeners are going to tune into that.
Absolutely.
They're done watching the Republican debate, which will be hopefully equally humorous to Jon's last show. But I was able to get on The Daily Show to talk with Jon about the book. And then after I was on the show, another gentleman reached out who's another straight Eagle Scout who had a lot of experience with the Boy Scouts at a national level. And Jonathan, thought there was an opportunity to maybe do some collaboration and try to work to change the policy. Fast forward about a month, and I was delivering a change.org petition that had been started by a lesbian dead mother who had been kicked out of her son's Cub Scout pack. And I remember thinking about Jonathan's email, we decided to collaborate and form Scouts for Equality. This was in June 2012. And then just 1 month later, actually, in July 2012, the Boy Scouts doubled down. They said that they weren't going to change the policy. They had just completed this confidential two-year review. and the policy was staying in place. And so to go from where we were in that July of 2012 to where we were last July, just this past month, on Monday, July 27th, when the Boy Scouts executive board voted 79% to 21% to end their ban, was pretty enormous.
It's definitely been a dramatic 3 years. I want to take you back, though, and actually take you back before you or I were born, because the Boy Scouts is seen, I think, by most Americans as this sort of place where boys go out in the woods and learn to tie knots and build campfires. But actually, it has an interesting history, which maybe you can tell us a little bit about. The founder of the Boy Scouts had ideas more than just bonding of young boys and making campfires.
Sure. So Lord Robert Baden-Powell, who's a British gentleman, founder of the International Scouting Movement, really envisioned the scouting movement, and not the Boy Scouts specifically or the Girl Scouts specifically, but scouting as a philosophy, as a cornerstone, as something that would be of service to both to the British Empire specifically, but to the world more generally. He saw it really more beyond just like outdoorsy skills, what have you, but as really a way to live a life. And just, you know, skills and life lessons that are first instilled at a very, very early age, but that they continue to grow in importance to the scout as that person grows up. And like, that's absolutely something that was true for me. I was already kind of an outdoorsy type when I joined the Cub Scouts back when I was in you know, very early elementary school. And, you know, my moms were already going to make sure that I spent lots of time hiking and camping and what have you. But scouting really reinforced the lessons that I was learning at home around the dinner table. Scouting played a really important role in fostering a spirit of self-reliance, of doing the right thing, of community service. And these are life lessons that have been a part of the scouting philosophy, really from its inception more than 100 years ago, and that still continue to guide the Boy Scouts, the Girl Scouts, and the World Organization for the Scout Movement, which is the WASM, or the International Scouting Governing Body.
And the Boy Scouts requires you not just to, as I said, learn how to build a campfire or tie a knot, but it, at least according to the oath, it requires you to believe in God and requires you to be, quote, morally straight, unquote.
Right.
At least it did 100 years ago. I don't know if we're going to change that.
It still does. And the scout oath is, on my honor, I will do my best to do my duty to God and my country, to obey the scout law, to help other people at all times, to keep myself physically strong, mentally awake, and morally straight.
And on the belief in God, I still believe, correct me if I'm wrong, that they don't allow atheists to be part of the Boy Scouts. Is that's still
correct.
Boy Scouts policy?
So the Boy Scouts and the Girl Scouts both are also religious organizations. There's a strong faith bent to the programs. Now, that's something that's necessarily going to come up a lot while you're out camping or whatever. You know, you'll say grace before dinner and maybe do a service on Sunday. But, you know, I've never sat around a campfire where we're talking about our favorite Bible verse or anything like that.
Right.
And that's in part because the Boy Scouts aren't a Christian organization.
Right.
I think it's a very important point that occasionally gets lost. Lord Robert Baden-Powell really envisioned scouting, especially after he spent more time traveling internationally and meeting lots of other non-Christians. He really saw scouting as a place for interfaith dialogue, which is one of the reasons why I was disappointed that there was a spinoff group from the Boy Scouts in the wake of their 2013 decision to allow gay youth that was only focused on Christianity. You know, I understand, obviously, it's free country and you should always have your opportunities to do what you want to do, but the Scouts really remain, I think, a critical institution for interfaith dialogue among people who do believe. Now, the Girl Scouts have decided to no longer ban atheists. What they've done is that they've maintained the religious spirit of the organization. The Girl Scout promise still contains the duty to God language. And at the same time, they've decided to stop removing people from the organization just because they might not believe or might be at a different place on their spiritual journey, or frankly, might not be on a spiritual journey. But their belief is that the values of scouting really are universal and should be a part of every young woman's life. And I think for the Boy Scouts, a similar solution would be ideal, one which maintains the religious spirit of the organization and continues to be reverent and maintain the duty to God, while also deciding we're not going to kick a young man out because he happens to be at a place on his spiritual journey where he's not believing. And frankly, you know, if you're if you're, you know, if at some point in your life you're not really questioning your faith at some level, yeah, I think you're not doing it right.
I certainly agree with you there. Let me say this, and I very much support the Girl Scouts decision, and I hope the Boy Scouts join them in that decision. If you're going to have interfaith dialogue, it shouldn't just between Jews, Christians, and Muslims, Buddhists, and Hindus, but also between people who have all levels of belief within that. But I bring it up to point out that before we get to the anti-gay bias, or maybe I should say former anti-gay bias, we'll get to that in a second, of the Boy Scouts, to point out that they've had other exclusionary rules in the past, including some that still continue, namely the ban against atheists. So I want to move on and ask you about the second part of the Scout Oath, the one that says you have to be morally straight. And I always found that interesting because the whole idea of straight meaning non-gay, I don't know when that happened, but I imagine it wasn't when the Lord formed the Boy Scouts 100 years ago. What does that term mean in the Boy Scouts idea, and what did it come to mean? How did it come to mean basically anti-gay?
Well, morally straight absolutely means what it's always meant in the scouting context, which is that you're going to be straight with someone, that you're going to be level with someone, that you're going to be square with somebody.
Honest.
That you're going to be honest. And I think it's actually a really crucial point, because to answer your question from just a moment ago, the nomenclature of straight as a slang for heterosexual didn't occur until the 1950s.
Yeah, that's
and
what I expected.
Exactly. And the Scout Oath was written well before that. So whenever, you know, Tony Perkins or John Stenberger or any of these other folks on the right who have been campaigning against the Boy Scouts have gotten up and said, well, morally straight, blah, blah, blah. If they actually look at the history, the history is very clear when straight became also associated with a slang for heterosexual. But I think it's a really important point, Mark.
Well, ironically, it means if straight means honest and having integrity, that would mean
exactly.
That someone who is openly gay should not only not hide their sexuality, they
right.
should actually be upfront about it.
Right. They should be honest about it.
Right.
This was why the Boy Scouts policy was so untenable. It asked people to lie. I went through the Scout Oath earlier. The Scout Law is 12 principles. The Scout is trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, brave, clean, and irreverent. That very first principle, a Scout is trustworthy. If you are asking people to lie about who they are in order to participate in the program, you are by definition creating an environment that is not trustworthy. And that is why the policy was never going to stand. It was why, as Eagle Scouts, me and my co-founder were able to stand up and say, if you actually look at the values of scouting, it's clear that this policy has to come to an end.
And we're going to talk about how it came to an end in just a few minutes. If you want to call in, it's 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. I'll be back with my guest, the Executive Director of Scouts for Equality, Zach Walls, right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. My guest is Zach Walls. He's the author of My Two Moms, Everything I Need to Know About Gay Marriage I Learned in Boy Scouts. You can still get his book on Amazon. Right, Zach? They can still buy your book?
You can still buy the book on Amazon. Unfortunately, the publisher didn't let me go with that subtitle. Online, you'll find it as My Two Moms, Lessons of Love, Strength, and What Makes a Family.
Oh, okay.
I love that subtitle, but unfortunately, my publisher wanted to go in a different direction.
All right. Well, I read a different one then on the internet. I apologize for that. But
No. There are images floating around that have that subtitle.
I gotcha.
Very easy mistake to make.
Well, and of course, your book turned out so well that you were on Jon Stewart, and that led you into Scouts for Equality. I wanted just to follow through with what we talked about a few minutes ago. So morally straight in the Boy Scouts context, meaning have honesty, have integrity, to tell the truth. When did it become morally straight means not gay, not, well, wouldn't be lesbian because they're not, well, but not gay, not bisexual for a boy?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't, you know, frankly, I don't know if the Boy Scouts themselves would have necessarily even ever made that argument because of the morally straight part of the oath. But I think that you saw folks on the right start to try to make that claim or extend that line of argument, frankly, as soon as this became a controversial issue, which really was in 1980 when a scout named Tim Curran was removed from the Scouts because he was gay.
Now, when they removed Tim Curran, was there an anti-gay policy, or did they just sort of make it up then in 1980?
It was very much a make it up as you go along scenario. But ostensibly, they'd put a policy into place in 1978. It's not entirely clear that that was in fact the case, but they wanted it up. Defending the policy, at that time, but then also during the 1990s, when a scout named Eagle Scout named James Dale, who really became the poster child for this issue at that time, he's an assistant scoutmaster in New Jersey. He's a gay Eagle Scout, very much an all-American guy, and he was outed in part because he was in a gay straight alliance at his university. And that court wound up working its way through the New Jersey legal system and went to the New Jersey Supreme Court, who ruled that the Boy Scouts ban was in violation of New Jersey law. The case was then appealed to the United States Supreme Court, which ruled that the Scouts had a First Amendment right to continue to discriminate. Ironically, the court's only Eagle Scout at that time, Justice Stephen Breyer, actually voted against the Boy Scouts in that decision. So even though the Boy Scouts wound up winning the case 5-4, the court's only Eagle Scout sided against the Boy Scouts.
And this was in the 1990s. And what's interesting to me is the changes both in the cultural landscape and the legal landscape since then. The cultural landscape, I think we all know. The idea of gay people, lesbian people being allowed to marry in the 1990s was somewhat of a pipe dream, I know, because I was active in it in the late 90s. And culturally, obviously, with the Supreme Court decision allowing full marriage equality, President Obama, polls going from 30-something percent of Americans supporting it to the north 50s, maybe even low 60s Americans supporting it. Culturally, there's been a dramatic change. One of the things that I want to understand is legally why anything has changed. The Boy Scouts is still a private organization. Why can't they discriminate?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not a lawyer, Mark, and I haven't been to law school, so I'm going to let you handle the legal questions.
Okay.
What I can tell you is that I know that the Boy Scouts were facing down actual litigation that was moving forward in Colorado, and there was also an investigation by the Attorney General of New York in New York State. And I think that their concern might not have necessarily even been that the legal landscape had changed, even though clearly, to some extent, you're seeing higher levels of scrutiny applied to laws that discriminate against LGBT people. But I think that their fear was less that that they might necessarily lose in court, although that may have been part of it, but also a protracted legal battle defending a policy that clearly is on the wrong side of history was not going to be a winning proposition for them over the long run. The Boy Scouts of America has a phenomenal brand despite all of the controversy that they've endured over the years. They are an institution that was lionized by Norman Rockwell. They're about as American as apple pie and baseball. And I don't think they wanted that ban subjected to the kind of high-profile scrutiny it would have received under a protracted legal challenge, especially one from somebody like David Boies.
Got to take another break. When we come back, I want to find out how you achieved this great victory and where we go from here. Toll-free 888-488-MARK, right back after this.
Progressive, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. My guest is Zach Walls. He is the author of My Two Moms, Lessons of Love, Strength, and What Makes a Family. Became YouTube famous when he stood up and defended his moms in Iowa. And since that time, he's been the executive director of Scouts for Equality. We've been talking about the history of the Boy Scouts and how they sort of started out with discrimination and their dramatic change, which came to a culmination just last week. Zach, how did that change occur? How was pressure put on them, not just legally, but culturally, socially?
Yeah, it's been a multi-year process. We co-founded, launched Scouts for Equality in June of 2012. And just the very next month, the Boy Scouts doubled down on their ban, said it wasn't going to change, that they had just completed this two-year review. And that was definitely a low point for us, but it's been all, for the most part, uphill from there. One of the things that we knew going into the campaign was that the Boy Scouts' most important asset was its brand. As I mentioned before, a group that's been lionized by Norman Rockwell, about as American as apple pie and baseball. And so we knew that the more we could talk about the ban with the media and the public, the more pressure they would feel to revisit that ban. And so we decided to draw attention to a number of the discrepancies between the Boy Scouts' corporate donors, which included lots of corporations that had very strict giving guidelines saying that they would not give to organizations that engaged in discrimination. And when we pointed out that some of these foundations, which included Intel, UPS, and some others, were giving to a group, the Boy Scouts, that did, in fact, violate their giving guidelines, a lot of them pulled back their funding. The other thing that we knew was that the nature of this ban was such that the damage of the ban was going to be really catastrophic for some of these individuals who are experiencing discrimination, and that these stories were going to emerge, and we had to be able to help give a megaphone to those people who had experienced discrimination. And sure enough,
tell me some of those stories. Just give me one of them, for example.
Yes, and sure enough, just right after we got going, a big one came out from a young man named Ryan Andresen, who was a gay scout from California who had been denied his Eagle Award because he was gay. And this was really the first time that since the campaign had started, we had seen a face on the issue of a gay scout who had been denied scouting's highest honor simply because of his sexual orientation. And that really got national press coverage, you know, wall to wall. And this was in October 2012, right at the height of the presidential fervor for the 2012 election cycle. And that was really, I think, the beginning of the end of the ban, simply because it was clear that this ban was unsustainable. In the spring, the Boy Scouts decided to hold a vote, and we launched a major organizing effort. We raised about $250,000, hired about 20 staff to work during this four-month stretch. And we were able to out-hustle the religious right. The final vote was 63% in favor of ending the ban on gay youth. And we knew that even though they didn't change the ban on gay adults with that vote, that they were setting themselves up to go down that path. It simply didn't make a lot of sense to allow gay youth, but then kick them out on their 18th birthday.
So talk to me a little bit about the distinction between the local Boy Scouts organizations and the national ones, because I remember back 10 years ago, there were already local Boy Scouts groups, local dens, den mothers, who said, we don't want to discriminate. They're making us discriminate, even though we don't want to. So how what about the relationship between locals and nationals? And now it seems, I guess, you're reversed. Now the national doesn't allow discrimination, but a few locals still do.
Well, one of the things that's really important to understand about the Boy Scouts is there's a key difference between the Boy Scouts and the Girl Scouts, and not just that they allow boys versus girls, but that the Girl Scouts have a very different model from the Boy Scouts. If you belong to a Girl Scout troop, that troop is a legally owned subsidiary, wholly owned and operated by Girl Scouts Incorporated. If you belong to a Boy Scout troop, that troop is chartered or legally sponsored by a third-party nonprofit group. It can be a PTA, it can be an American Legion, it can be a church. They're concerned citizens of Louisville, whatever the case may be. And so this difference has meant that over time, the various chartering partners or chartering organizations have become very powerful within the Boy Scouts. And 70% of all Boy Scout units are chartered by churches. So what this means is that even though all of this is happening at the local level, there are a lot of national level churches like the Jesus Christ Church of Latter-day Saints and the Catholic
Mormon Church
and the United Methodist Church, exactly, that have a lot of influence within the Boy Scouts that doesn't exist for the Girl Scouts, which is part of why the Girl Scouts have been able to be a little bit more nimble on this issue, because they're not beholden to a specific interest. But the Boy Scouts have these partners, and they have to work to keep them in the program. So that has resulted in some of this tension, especially because you had at the local level a lot of these troops saying, well, we don't want to discriminate. Why are we being forced to follow a national standard? So now that the Boy Scouts have lifted that national standard and said, you know, we're going to stop kicking people out of the Boy Scouts for being gay. And at the same time, we are going to affirm the right of each individual troop to select adult leaders who are in line with that troop's religious beliefs. And this is for a lot of people going to mean that they won't select gay adults. That's kind of created where we are now.
So no, your job's not done at Scouts for Equality. You still have more work to do.
Well, beyond even any further policy change, there's a lot of we got to win some hearts and minds. You know, changing we saw this in the military. You know, changing a policy, it's important and it has to happen, and we're very glad that we did that. Now we're going to go about winning hearts and minds, and the Boy Scouts. We're going to be chartering new fully inclusive Boy Scout units. We've set a goal of chartering 1,000 new units over the next 24 months. We're very excited about that. We're hoping to bring some of the progressive faith partners that left the Boy Scouts because of the ban back into the scouting family. I think the future is definitely going to be tough for the Boy Scouts. There are going to be a lot of conservatives and moderates who supported the ban who are going to think about leaving. That might even include the Mormons. But I think over the long run, this is a critical step for the Boy Scouts to take to set them up for success over the next century.
Does a Mormon-sponsored Boy Scouts troop allow non-Mormons to be a part of it?
They don't, as a matter of fact.
Interesting. And so this whole interfaith dialogue that the founder wanted doesn't exist in some church-sponsored Boy Scouts groups.
Well, it still happens when you go to a summer camp or a jamboree or those kinds of events where you're bringing lots of troops together. Frankly, troops don't interact with each other a whole lot on their own unless they're at a council-wide event or something like that. But they're also, the Mormons actually use the Boy Scout program for its own youth ministry. Now, I was a Unitarian Universalist growing up, but the troop that I belonged to was chartered by a United Methodist Church. And there were lots of kids from lots of different faiths within my troop, and it was a non-issue. And so there was that dialogue taking place. The Mormons, however, use scouting as a youth ministry program to actually every Mormon boy is automatically enrolled when he turns 8 years old. And they have a very different use or view of the program compared to a lot of other denominations.
So let me ask you a more personal question. You're a straight guy. You're the son of two lesbian moms. Does leading an organization for gay equality, are there people there that I'm just curious to know how the gay community are they very happy to have a straight person lead that? Are they upset? Do they think a gay person should lead that? Has there been any kind of has there been mostly support? How does that feel culturally, socially?
You know, it's funny. We kind of joke that we're one of the straightest gay groups in the movement, because not only am I straight, but my other co-founder is straight, and of our founding staff, five of six of us are all heterosexual. But all of us are also of a generation, I think, where equality is just—it's kind of a no-brainer, and it's very much taken for granted. And so it makes sense that you'd have straight allies working side by side for full equality. But if you look at our actual board of directors, it's about a 50-50 split between gay and straight. And so that's really never been an issue for us as an organization. I think that there certainly is a valid critique, and I think it should be a concern, and it is something that we definitely are having conversations about internally and externally, the role of straight allies versus, leadership of gay members. And I think in this situation, we were in a really important position. I was able to continue to be a registered adult member of the Boy Scouts while having this conversation, which I think was an important point of leverage.
Well, let me just say this as a gay man. I firmly support what you're doing. I'm glad you're doing it. I love straight allies. I'm a white person that marches with black people, and I'm a non-Latino that marches with Latinos. And as a Jewish person, I like when non-Jews support Jewish causes. To me, part of being a progressive exactly is one group supporting other groups' rights. To me, that's what makes us strong. So it was kind of a devil's advocate question, because I firmly support what you're doing, and I think you're doing an excellent job.
Thanks, Mark.
Last question. We met at the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, which actually helps candidates run for office. Zach Walls, are you going to run for office anytime soon?
Not anytime soon. I just graduated from college a year ago. I haven't even started applying to graduate schools yet, and I definitely want to get some grad experience underway. And I want to get back to Iowa. I'm currently living in Washington, D.C. I moved out there for a White House internship, and I was able to stay for another year through the Truman Albright Fellowship Program. But I'm looking forward to getting back to Iowa.
Okay, fair enough. And you're like a sixth-generation Iowan, I think, something like that.
Yeah, you got it.
That's a long time in Iowa. Well, I wish you well in going back to Iowa. Thank you for taking the time and explaining the situation to us. Thank you very much for coming here on the Inside Scoop.
Thanks, Mark.
Folks, if you want to call in and talk about this issue, please feel free. Now's your time. It's 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. This is Mark Levine. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Harvard economist and a Yale lawyer. He does not keep up with the Kardashians. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. Got a conservative who casually misquotes the Bible and the Constitution? Send him to school with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Everybody wants to live like they want to live. Everyone wants to love like they want to love. Everyone wants to be closer to free. I think the argument is right there in the song. It's pretty obvious. Equality under the law, treat people fairly. Zach Walls definitely demonstrates that, and his mothers should be, and I'm sure are, quite proud of him. He also mentioned, and I was going to get to this, so I'm glad he mentioned it, John Stewart, sort of the patron saint of liberal broadcasters, someone who I've looked to for 16 years. I probably first noticed John Stewart in the 2000 election. I still remember indecision 2000, and I don't know, he made me feel a little better when the Supreme Court stole that election. I felt a little bit better. He's going off the air tonight. You got to watch this show. If you've never watched Jon Stewart, you have to watch Comedy Central tonight, 11 p.m. It will be on after the Republican debates. I'll be up pretty late tonight watching the Republican debates, watching Jon Stewart, and I'm going to tell you all about my thoughts on it tomorrow. But if you're like me, and listen, I don't agree all the time with Jon Stewart. Sometimes I disagree with him, and of course, just like with anyone. But John Stewart did a tremendous job at skewering the right, particularly at skewering Fox News, which he called bull, I can't say the S word on the air, mountain. Doesn't have the same power to say BS mountain. But that, in essence, is what he decried on Fox News. And he was out there showing the inconsistencies between hosts like Hannity and Megyn Kelly and the others that I still tangle with to this day. He became famous in tangling with Bill O'Reilly there as well. But I think Jon Stewart mostly skewered everyone, not just the right. He certainly went after President Obama. He went after Bill Clinton. He was sort of the part of us that saw politics and said, well, this is ridiculous. And Jon Stewart would point out how ridiculous it was. It's amazing, really, that it's been 16 years. I guess I'm feeling really old, like I'm sure he is. He certainly deserves a break. You should watch Jon Stewart tonight, 11 o'clock. I don't usually promote TV, but I'm about to promote that. And I'm going to tell you that right before watching Comedy Central, you should watch Fox. Not because I'm on, but because it is, of course, the great debate, or should I call it Trump's next reality show. The Republican candidates for presidents did have a debate in New Hampshire just a few days ago. Nobody watched. Nobody noticed. It got virtually no media attention. 14 candidates debated then. There'll only be 10 that debate tonight. And yet nobody noticed because there is one person sucking up all the energy in the room. We all know his name. It is the Donald. It will be interesting as a matter of sheer theater. Now, I'll be the first to tell you I think Donald Trump has zero chance of winning the Republican nomination and a less than zero chance of becoming president of the United States. Frankly, I would love it if he wins the Republican nomination. I probably shouldn't say zero chance. Let's give him a 5% shot because I want him to win the Republican nomination and I want him to lose badly in a general election. But Donald Trump appeals to an angry mob sense that I would argue has been building in America ever since, well, Newt Gingrich sent his pitchforks to Congress back in the 1990s, ever since they turned disagreement over issues into something personal. you know, rifling through all of Bill Clinton's personal life to try to bring him down. People think that the attacks on President Obama are something new, or it's just because the Republicans are racist. I've long argued, no, this is a strategy. It's a strategy. It's a strategy of demeaning the other side. If someone does, if you're having an argument with someone and it turns into a personal attack, an ad hominem attack, you know why people attack you personally. They do it because they recognize that they can't win the argument with the facts. If they could, they wouldn't be attacking you personally. And that's in essence what the Republicans are doing and have done. And so Donald Trump is, to me, the epitome of everything the Republicans have stood for in the past 20 years, turning ordinary policy debates, sophisticated debates from the likes of a William F. Buckley or George Will, conservatives I certainly disagree with, but are willing to make arguments in intellectual terms, to really, well, I described it a couple days ago as the Know Nothing Party, as a party that emphasizes knowing nothing, emphasizes teaching nothing, emphasizes ignorance. After all, it's the Republican Party that is squarely against science when it comes to such basic things as climate change, such really undisputable things as climate change. So they're against science. And when you have a party that's against science, it's really hard to argue with them. They are all emotion. And therefore, I got to say, I, like many Americans, am amused by Donald Trump. I won't deny it. He amuses me because I think he is the id of the Republican Party. He represents what the Republican Party has become all this time. So, yes, I'll be watching. And tomorrow, I'm going to give you a full rundown of the debate. I'm going to go through all the highlights. I'll be playing, in case you missed it, I'll be playing highlights. But even if you saw it, along with my commentary, not just the Donald Trump, I'll play Jeb Bush, I'll play Scott Walker, I'll play, who knows, who's going to say the most outrageous thing. Maybe it'll be Ted Cruz this time. Maybe it won't be Donald Trump. But I'm going to be playing that for you. I'm going to give you my full analysis tomorrow. There's going to be a lot to say. It's going to be a long debate, and I probably won't be able to take any calls tomorrow. But Monday, we're having a special three-hour show, all 3 hours of me, and there'll be plenty of time for you to tell me your thoughts on the debate. So whether you watch it tonight, whether you hear my analysis tomorrow, or whether you do both, I want to hear your analysis on Monday. Don't forget, write down if you want, we're going to talk in detail about the debate. So you got a lot of homework tonight. You got to watch the Republican debate. You got to watch Jon Stewart. One thing Comedy Central is doing that I noticed, and I taped a whole bunch of them, is they're playing a whole bunch of old Jon Stewart episodes, including the first ones. And, you know, I don't want to claim that Jon Stewart is perfect or anything like that, but I can't think of a single liberal person that has successfully spoken for me as often over the last 15 years as Jon Stewart. I mean, Bill Clinton kind of has, but he hasn't been on air, as Jon Stewart says, 4 days a week, 22 minutes a day, every other week. Tough schedule. For the last year or so. And he's also, I think, given birth to a whole group of satirists, to people like John Oliver on HBO, to Stephen Colbert, who's going to be doing his own show on CBS. I really love the way he does video, and I hope that the following Daily Show continues to show video, because it's only by showing someone's words today and how it contradicted what they said, oh, say, 5, 10 years ago, or maybe 5 or 10 months or 5 weeks ago, that he shows the true dishonesty, true disingenuous of a lot of people today. Ironically, the very person that Jon Stewart would most like to skewer, the Donald, is likely to star tonight, the same day that Jon Stewart says his goodbye. Because the crassness that is our political society, the fact with the way that which people can say anything and believe anything, the thing that Jon Stewart has so fought for 15 years is still, unfortunately, alive and well. And in Donald Trump, we do have someone who will say and do anything to be president. Not, I think, because he wants to be president, but because I think he's enjoying his own reality show at our expense. You don't want to miss the show tonight on Fox and Jon Stewart later. This is Mark Levine. Follow me on Twitter at Mark Levine Talk. My website's marklevinetalk.com. Talk to you tomorrow.